This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Mark Packer, Wes Durham. We continue to stream live on the ESPN app. You've got us on SiriusXM Channel 371. Number for the program is 844-SAY-ACCN. Hopefully everybody had a wonderful holiday weekend. But Wes, I hope the family's doing well. And man, it is a busy, busy week for us coming up.
Yeah, no doubt. Light schedule. In fact, not much at all today. Pick up with basketball tomorrow and bowl season around the corner as well. Miami and Oklahoma State first up on the docket. So everybody good? Santa Claus good to you? Did you get your stocking stuffers?
I tell you, there was a theme for me this year for Christmas, and it's good because it involved brown water. I received four different bottles of brown water. Ooh. I received a bourbon maple syrup, which I partook yesterday with Mrs. P making pancakes for a brunch, which were great. I had bourbon stationery. I got bourbon tumblers.
Gah.
I got a new bourbon triangular wedge tumbler and this other sort of stuff. But so I sensed a theme from folks that gave me gifts this year, which was beautiful.
Wait.
There you go.
Wait.
Brown hold water on. Was hold in, was hold in on. The air.
Hold on. What is bourbon stationery?
I should have brought it down. I think Emerson got this for me. I could be mistaken. After all the bourbon, you just kind of lose sight. It's stationary, and the front of the stationary literally is a glass of bourbon with one ice cube on it. Pretty cool. Stationary. So that's when you know they love you, right? That's when you know they love you, when they send you the bourbon stationary. So it was a big haul of brown water and assortments. So between tumblers, ice, stationery, maple syrup, and four different wonderful bottles of bourbon, life is good. I am ready to bring in the new year.
Yeah, I saw the wedge made an appearance on social media, so I figured we would discuss the wedge at some point. And apparently that got some reaction after I reposted it. So
I'm
anxious to see how successful you are with the wedge.
And speaking of that, I partook with the wedge and an ACC flavor per se. I'll tie this into the ACC network here.
Nice.
One of the bottles of bourbon, this came from my sister, I believe, was Jefferson's Reserve Very Ooh. Small batch. So it kind of ties in to the grounds in Charlottesville and UVA. So we tied in the whole ACC network conference festive atmosphere for the holiday. So that's how we tied that little bad boy in. Just sampled a little bit of
Hat tip to your sister. That's a pretty good line to go. Jefferson's, nice. Well done.
Jefferson Reserve. It's a very small batch.
Very small.
Good. And and the thing that was so good, because a lot of these bourbons I'd never sampled before, I did a little research on all of them before I decided which one I was going to go with first. Not that it mattered. But all four were very high-quality brown waters. So this was a good haul for the Pac-Man this holiday season.
Nice
so
job.
Excited about that. Yeah. That was good.
Ho, ho, ho for the Pac-Man.
Ho, ho, ho. And if you caught our Christmas special on Friday, and I had a number of people, I don't know about you, Wes, but I had a number of people this weekend go, I saw that Packer and Durham Christmas special. Oh, God, appreciate you all watching while you're opening up gifts, hopefully. Oh, yeah. But, what was in that Packer and Durham mug you had there? I'm not telling you what was in that thing.
I
was wearing a Walt Disney World Santa Claus Christmas tree hat. So what do you think was in the mug?
Mm-hmm.
Water?
That's right.
Please.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Getting a real
a moment at some point. We get a moment at some point before the week's out. Maybe we run a clip from the holiday hangout just to show folks the fun we had.
Again, you know what's next after the brown water? We win another one of these. That's what we do. We win another one of these right here for that Christmas special. That's what we're going to do.
All right, we've got a few headlines to get to here. We thought it would be an uphill fight Saturday in Fort Worth on a neutral floor for Virginia and Gonzaga, and it was an uphill fight from almost the time the ball went in the air. Oof. At the Dickies Arena in Fort Worth. Zags looked the part, Pack, in every way, shape, and form. They are so good to watch. Move the ball crisply. Drew Timmy played out of his mind. And Virginia just struggled to match it possession to possession, to be honest with you.
You know, when this game was scheduled, we kind of said, yikes, hope so. Hope you got your A game. The Zags are really – they're number one. And I'm not sure. I'm going to go on and say it right now, December 28th. Not sure they're going to lose a game.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk could about be. Who they have to see in could their conference. Be. They're not going to lose a game in their league, I don't think. Yeah. They've already beaten four top 20 teams. That game was not competitive. Speaking of Jefferson's reserve, that game was not competitive. I mean, the Hoos were down 33. I mean, how many times have you seen a Tony Bennett team defensively give up 80 points in the game? I think they gave it up only once last year. I think they gave up 80. The Zags had 80 with 8.5 minutes to go. 8.5 to go. So Tony Bennett said it best. We have a lot of work to do. And he is right. A lot of work to do in Charlottesville.
Other storyline over the weekend, the opt-outs at Carolina continue ahead of the Orange Bowl game against Texas A&M, and this one is the one that probably, you know, you thought, oh, maybe, maybe not, and Javonte Williams has announced that he, too, will not play in the ball game against the Aggies. So now that means Javonte Williams, Michael Carter, and De'Ami Brown will not see action for the Tar Heels in the matchup against Texas A&M on the second day of January.
Well,
in the Capital One Orange Bowl.
Throw in Chaz Surratt, too, on the defensive side.
Yeah, and Chaz Surratt, right.
Mack Brown will join us, by the way, unless he opts out, at 9:15 this morning.
He'll be here. Yeah,
he's Mack coming. Will be here. But I got to be honest with you. I totally understand how all student-athletes put themselves at first. I get it. I mean, I totally get it. But there's also a large part of me that sits back and says, hey, North Carolina, you know, it's been 40 years since an ACC championship. It's been 70 years since a major bowl. Hey, you guys have worked your tails off to put yourselves in this position, go to the Orange Bowl for the first time. Don't you want to finish the deal? I mean, I'm really split on this one. Again, I totally understand the student athlete position this particular year, but I also understand you've worked so hard. I mean, just a couple of years ago, you guys couldn't beat anybody. Now, here you are, fast forward the clock. You're going to the Orange Bowl. You're taking on a really good Texas A&M team. And I got a funny, you know, the old school guy is like, this is ridiculous, right? But I'm really torn on this one. It just seems like this would be the kind of game that you'd want to play in. It's the Orange Bowl, for crying out. It's not like North Carolina goes to the Orange Bowl every other year. How about once every 70 years? How about never? How about a major bowl for the first time since 1950? So I'm kind of 50-50 on this one. This one's tough. This one's really tough.
Yeah, I think the thing that probably catches your eye here is that it is one of the New Year's Six games. And as you said, historically, Carolina's just not been to this point. And now you've got arguably three of their top offensive players and certainly one of their more impactful defensive players electing not to ride with them against Texas A&M. Is it the CFP? No, but it is a New Year's Six game, and I think that's the part that probably surprises most. So we'll get to that story. We'll get to Duke's women's basketball decision. Virginia, Luke Hancock going to join us. Steve Weissman's going to be here. And bottom of the hour, we'll talk about the Duke women's story. Reese Davis, Mack Brown, as Pac said, we got it all for you on a Monday. We're here until 10 o'clock to get you started on the week between Christmas and New Year's. We got plenty now. We got plenty, Pack. We'll get to phone calls, too. 844-SAY-ACCN. And we look forward to catching up with you as we get started. But when we come back, Mr. Packer, the world-famous best and worst of the weekend. We'll do all that when we continue. Monday morning with Packer and Durham. You know what they say? Pull up a chair. See you in a minute.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Monday. 844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the program. Steve Weissman Riley News and Observer coming up here in about 15 minutes or so to talk about a number of things, including the Duke women's program in hoops saying we're going to bypass the rest of the year. Big story. Yeah. We'll get into all of that and other stuff. 844-SAY-ACCN. But we're going to give you a little best of and worst of the holiday weekend, Wes. And we always like to start on the positive side. And let's lead off with the folks down in Miami, because they had a kind of a good news, bad news weekend. The good news, though, is that De'Aaron King said, there's unfinished business in Coral Gables, and he is coming back for a sixth year of college football. And that is great news for Manny and the boys with the Canes.
I was exchanging notes with Tom Luganville over the weekend after this was announced, because remember, he brought it up on the show last week, right, Pac?
Yep.
That this was a real possibility just simply because the body of work and comparative to the next level, there may be some questions. I know Luges will be with you here on Thursday. You guys can dive more into this as to what he thinks, you know, King will benefit most from. But reality is, this is a win for Miami. It's a win for the ACC, and I think long-term a win for De'Aaron King. I really do. I think he made a really, really smart decision here.
Yeah, totally agree. And we talked about the depth of quarterback play this year being far superior than every other conference. Next year is not going to be bad either. It just seems like everybody's got somebody with returning experience at quarterback, really with the exception of Duke, given that Chase Bryce decided to transfer to Appalachian State. So, again, 21 should be a pretty good year for the ACC in the quarterback position.
Yeah. All right. Shift gears. Basketball, Saturday, KFC Yum Center, Louisville, Kentucky, right there on the riverbank. Way to go, Cards. Way to go. 62-59, the happy final, Pack.
Got tight down the stretch. Sweaty palm time, but you know what? Louisville takes care of business, and boy, the nightmares continue for Big Blue Nation. Coach Cal had to figure that thing out, but man, Coach Mack, he did the video. We look forward to having you boys in town, and lo and behold, a W for the Cards. And speaking of brown water, I guarantee you it was tasting good Saturday night.
Yeah, for all the Card fans, for sure. Carlique Jones was outstanding, couple of big free throws late, and Louisville a big winner, 62-59. But wait, there's more. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get to some HOA video, shall we? Because revenge was sweet for Scott Satterfield.
Green. Here, throw the bomb.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, oh, wait. No, did you get it? Did you get it?
Yeah, I got it.
Holy smokes. Holy smokes.
Oh, so good. That is so
good. I'm going to tell you something.
I just tell you,
I think it got some issues in that neighborhood, Packer.
We got some vandalism and TP rolling. We got the AD, Vince Tyree, out there leading the charge. You got Satterfield showing you some arm strength. We got the neighbors saying, oh, yeah, well, you missed a limb. No, that's sweet. You know, that's one of those Coach Mack comes back thrilled that the Cards knocked off the Cats, and then he comes home and he sees that. You know, he had a smile on his face. But again, that neighborhood, that cul, that's a nasty cul-de-sac, man.
Yeah, it is.
It's personal. It is personal on that street now. It's great. I loved it.
Now, congratulations to Chris Mack in Louisville on the win. And and I knew Satterfield would get his revenge at some point. And he did a nice job, by the way.
Yeah.
A little disappointed in the underhand act, by the way, with the toilet paper. I was expecting the old quarterback to reach back. All right, speaking of awards, and they're still to come, in early January, the College Football Award Show will be followed by or follows the Heisman Trophy just after we turn the calendar to 21, and the ACC has a finalist for the Heisman Trophy, and I don't think anybody's surprised here, right?
No.
Trevor Lawrence is a finalist for the Heisman Trophy, Pac.
He is the best player in college football for the 400th time. Whether he wins the award, I have no earthly idea. That's why they count votes. But you know what? When everybody was oohing and aahing yesterday that the Jacksonville Jags had locked up the first pick of the NFL draft, I didn't hear anybody going, hey, man, Devontae Smith, man, he's going to Jacksonville. Hey, Mac Jones is going to Jacksonville. No, there was none of that conversation. You know why? Because 16 with the Tiger Paw is the best player in college football. That is why. So congratulations to Trevor Lawrence. And if he wins it, awesome. If he doesn't, as Dabo said after the Notre Dame game last week, that's the Heisman's loss. And he's right. Trevor Lawrence has been fantastic. Well-deserved.
Yeah. We will we'll dig into all that with Reese Davis coming up as well later in the program about the Heisman and also the week ahead to the CFP coming up on Friday's semifinals. All right, we mentioned this, Pack, and I think you put this down on the best of the weekend, right?
I did. This is mine. You can count on this
one. Yeah. The L's.
Don't give it away. Let folks figure it out.
All right, go ahead.
There it is.
Go ahead.
The best of the ACC weekend involves, thank goodness, for the Kentucky Wildcats. That'd be four L's in Wildcats. The Wildcats are now 1-6. I mean, this is, no disrespect. I mean, the ACC's always been known for a basketball league. The SEC's always been known for a football league. But the one team in the SEC that does have great, not good, great basketball traditions, Kentucky. And they're all 1-6. You got to go back to 1926 for that start, but they're 0-4 in the ACC. And I will tell you, if we were doing ACC bracketology this week for hoops, I can assure you Kentucky be 16. All right, I'll just tell you that right now. We're not going to do bracketology this week, but if they were, Kentucky, right, you'd be 16 with the 0-4 start in the ACC. They got issues. They got a lot of problems.
Yeah.
But that'd be a you problem, not a me problem.
That's it. Last note on best of the weekend, and this one was kind of a line item, but a really big one. Just as De'Aaron King coming back to Miami is important, Zion Johnson is going to return for his fifth season in the offensive line at Boston College. Remember, he made the move. Eric McClain talked about this during the course of the fall. He made the move from guard to tackle, and Johnson wants one more year in that offense with Jeff Hafley and Frank Cignetti. And got to be honest, this is as much a win as one of the skill guys coming back in many ways for a team that'll have Djurkovic at quarterback, pretty steady running back play. You know they got good wide receivers. Lewis and Flowers will be back. Pack, I'd be really excited here to see Zion Johnson on my left side if I were Phil Djurkovic next fall.
Yep, this was a nice Christmas gift for Jeff Hafley and the BC football program, because that's a guy that was probably thinking, hey, I could – go to the next level. But you know what? Hey, life is good. Chestnut Hill. So, again, a win, win, win. Much like you talked about De'Aaron King, good for him, good for Zion, good for BC, good for ACC football.
Yeah. So, more to come. Best of the weekend already on Packer and Durham in the books. And when we come back, we'll go the other way. Oh, we're going to do both in the second.
We're going to do worse now. Yeah, we've got to do worse now.
Oh, we are going to do worse. Well, the list is the list. We've already capped some of this here. And I got to be honest with you, Saturday afternoon, we knew it might be a tough fight. Pack, it was over quickly, Billy. It was over quickly in the ball game with Virginia and Gonzaga.
I was worried about it. When this game was announced, I was worried about it because the Hoos are coming off. Again, there are no excuses here. Best team definitely won the game. But when it was announced, it was great that Virginia said, hey, we got to go play somebody. Because remember, they lost the Michigan State game and Villanova game. You'll miss that out too with the COVID stuff. So it's been a while for the Hoos to play, but this is the wrong team. I know Tony Bennett said, hey, this game's going to help us down the road. Man, I don't know. The Zags are so offensively skilled. And, man, they've been lighting people up now. Listen, they put over three digits on Kansas. They put a 99 spot on Iowa. They put 98 on the Hoos. I told you they were up by 33 at one point in time. They had 21 made layups.
Mm-hmm.
Pack line defense. Now, again, you think Tony Bennett, hey, there's games that Tony Bennett and the boys, they're shutting people down and you don't get to 50, 45. Zags had 80 with 8.5 to go. That is a great basketball team. Mark Few is a great coach. Yeah. Like I told you, I'm not sure they're going to lose a game. They are that good.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
But Virginia, this is the ACC preseason pick now. We're going to get into this thing about the alpha dogs later on in the show about hoops. But I'm a little concerned about Virginia. I mean, at the San Francisco game, I was like, yeah, okay. Hey, that happens. And you did the Kent State game, which was an overtime game. But, I mean, they got obliterated Saturday. I mean, there's no sugarcoating this. This was This is kind of men versus boys. It'll kind of look like it.
Pack, here's the other thing, too, and we got into this a little bit last week with Jay Billis before we went to the holiday break. Here is a stat that has now jumped to this. The ACC is 1-10 against AP-ranked opponents. Okay, and here's the rub on this. We don't know how many games teams are going to play this year. Your conference is going to have to be regarded by some of the things you do beyond the conference wall, if you will. And when you're 1-10 as a league against the AP ranked, that's a number that won't go away in that committee room.
Well, it's the latest AP ranked list of top 25. And of those teams, ACC's 1-10. But your point is, where do you find quality wins, right? I mean, especially when you take a snapshot of our league currently, Wes, and not to be Debbie Downer here, but, you know, we had a streak of top 10s in the AP get snapped at 461 straight, which went back to March of 1996. Last week, we had a streak of 1,038 consecutive polls of at least one ACC team in the AP top 15. That goes back to December of 1961. So when you take a snapshot of your out-of-conference schedule and your latest AP poll shows you 1-10, the only one being Virginia Tech against Villanova, you start to wonder, okay, wait a minute, if we can't find wins against non-conference opponents, well, you're going to find some good wins in the league. Right now, there's nobody in the top 15. So this is really uncharted territory for us as an ACC basketball knuckleheads that love this stuff. And it's kind of weird, isn't it? In a year in which we've had four ACC teams in the AP top 10 in football, two in the college football playoff, the same year we have nobody in men's basketball in the top 15 for the first time since December of 1961. It has been a weird and strange year, but it is reality, unfortunately, for the men right now, that there's no alpha. And we're going to get into this in another segment, but we're kind of wondering who is going to emerge. Last year we had the glob, right, and which was the middle tier. This year, to be honest with you, it's not so much the glob in the middle, it's who in the top is going to emerge as a team that you could sense that, hey, they're worthy of getting to a Final Four. I'm going to be honest with you. December 28th, I am hard-pressed to think that we've got a team right now that looks like they could get to the Final Four. And I don't think I've ever, in my lifetime, have never been able to make that statement at this time of the year.
Well, and that's the concern I have because, you know, I started making a couple of notes getting ready for Duke and Pittsburgh tomorrow night. You start thinking of a mark. We don't know how many games are going to be played, right? I mean, we know what the schedule is, but we haven't had the postponements and things like that. And we're going to talk with Steve Weissman here in a minute about Duke's women's program. I don't know that we'll have that on the men's side. Let's hope not. But that being said, that 1-10 against the AP ranked, okay, then think about kind of where your league's going to be. You're going to have to do all that within the walls of the league. Remember sometimes how we talk about teams and their resumes because they don't really have that great non-conference win? Well, they may not make the tournament. Well, right now, what are we going to talk about from the league standpoint? That's where my concern is. We move through this conference schedule, and let's say it's dog-eat-dog in the conference and it's really good and really close. But what's that going to do once that committee gets together?
Right.
And how are they going to formulate how many? I mean, I see all Joe Lunardi going to work with nine teams this and okay, I'll let Joe write that because Joe's got more experience than I do. But I don't know that. We don't know that at the end of the road they're going to be nine. So I guess what I'm saying is the missed opportunities in non-conference, let's hope it doesn't hurt the ACC at the end of the card here, because of, you know, all the hurdles you're going to have to get through just to have a conference season as it is.
It's much like, in some respects, Kentucky, who we just mentioned on the flip side. When you're 1-6 and you basically have very few teams in your conference that are even ranked, in their case, it's Tennessee, looks like a Final Four team potentially, and then it's what else? I mean, you kind of wonder, you know, do you feast on a bunch of bad teams, and is that good enough to get you in? So it's going to be a really, you know, again, January and February, I have no earthly idea, Wes, what it's going to look like in terms of how many games can you play and who can get any kind of momentum and a rhythm of a season to kind of get on a roll. And I don't know, is it Florida State? Is it North Carolina? Is it Virginia Tech? Louisville coming off their win? I mean, I don't know. I have no earthly idea.
All right. A couple more things here to touch on before we get to the break. We did mention this and more to come in a moment with Steve Weissman of the News and Observer in Raleigh. Carol Lawson and Duke University announcing that they're shutting down their women's basketball program for the remainder of the year. They had been on pause for activity. We'll get to the details of the decision and more, but essentially 4 games in, they have decided to basically cancel the rest of the season. This is because of impact of the coronavirus. They did have some positive tests within the travel party. The contact tracing put them on pause. And we'll get to Steve on what other developments occurred, but that's where it is with Duke women's basketball. In the big picture, how does that work for the conference? You know, I don't know that. We'll see what Steve can tell us coming up. That's one of the reasons we're fortunate to have him. We mentioned this in the A block. UNC's Orange Bowl exodus continued with Javonte Williams over the weekend, and he joins Chaz Surratt, De'Ami Brown, and Michael Carter as guys who are not going to play in the ball game. Surratt, obviously the biggest star on defense, and then you got 3 of the 4 on offense that were your go-tos. And one of my favorite tweets of the weekend, Pack, comes from the legendary He's Not Here account in Chapel Hill. Look at the numbers. Somebody at He's Not, in between a big blue cup, decided to put the numbers together on who's opted out. 2,385 yards of rushing, 1,671 yards of receiving, and 41 touchdowns are out of the lineup for the Orange Bowl. Mm. Oof.
You know who loves
that? That's hard math.
Jimbo Fisher loved that. That's Merry Christmas, Jimbo.
Sure.
Made life a lot easier for the folks in Aggie Land. You know, the leading rusher for North Carolina in the Orange Bowl is Sam Howell.
Sam Howell. Yeah.
Yikes. Yeah. So – again, yeah, we'll have Mac Brown later on, and Mac will have to deal with it.
Yep.
But that, again, like I said, I kind of get it, but I'm also disappointed because I want to see those guys play in the biggest game North Carolina's going to play in a long, long time.
Sam Howell, just over 300 yards of rushing, by the way. that's a long shot from what Williams and Carter did, right? Last note, Rodney Miller, who big man from Miami, and this is unfortunate for Jim Larranega because it seems like the injury thing has been a heavy storyline for them since practice started. Sam Wardenberg already out for the year, and now the big man Rodney Miller is out for the remainder of the season with a knee injury. Miller has had an oft-injured career in Coral Gables. He committed to getting his body in great shape a couple of years ago, then got sidetracked with an injury, had an injury when he arrived, and now is out for the year for the remainder of the season. That's a difficult, difficult loss for Miami, who was having to play small at times anyway, and now will play, I guess, even smaller. And the Canes get back on the floor this week as well. So our best to Rodney Miller in his recovery. But good news is he could probably come back on the waiver year because everybody gets a free run next year as a result of this year.
2 years in a row, though, for Larranega's guys, just can't get healthy. Last year was one of those deals you're thinking, all right, you got it out of your system. Hopefully this year will be better. Mm-hmm. That has unfortunately not been the case so far for the Canes.
Yep. When we come back, we'll dig more into the story surrounding Duke women's basketball opting out of the rest of the basketball season. And looking forward to talking with Steve Weissman, who covers Duke, not only women's and men's, but all their athletic programs for the News and Observer in Raleigh. He'll come back and join Packer and Durham on a Monday right here on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. The Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham. Happy holidays, everybody. 2020 is coming to a screeching halt by the end of the week. Thank goodness. 844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the program. We're now joined by Steve Weissman from the Raleigh News and Observer. Does a great job. Steve, first of all, happy holidays. We appreciate you getting up with us, and hopefully you had a great weekend. Busy one, though.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate the Van Halen on the bumper there, too.
Just for you. Just make sure that you're up and moving. All right, so a big story from the weekend was the Duke women's basketball program going, hey, we're tapping out, we're opting out. What was the reason behind all of this? And was it as shocking? Because when I read it, I couldn't believe it. But hey, they know their program better than we do. So you give us the lowdown on this.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that came out on Christmas Day, but obviously the decision wasn't made on Christmas Day. It was made a little before that, and it's just kind of how things got out. But it goes back to their game with Louisville, and the last game they played on December 9th. It turned out that Louisville had positive players that was discovered after the game, which caused Duke to go on pause, caused Louisville to go on pause. And the players didn't set well with them, because they thought, Duke is testing every day, and the ACC requirements are, test within 72 hours of the game and then 48 hours after, and for basketball, for indoor sports. And the Duke players were like, wait a minute, if we had tested every day, we would have discovered this, and then, our people wouldn't have gotten sick. They had a few people in their party that tested positive after the Louisville game. So that's kind of where it stemmed from. And the players took control of the situation and just said, no, if the league would change this to where everybody tested every day like we do, we'd be comfortable playing. But that didn't happen. That's not the protocol set by the medical advisory group. And so the players just said, okay, we're going to tap out. We're going to take control of this ourselves. And it's not worth it to us to put us in that situation.
So, Steve, there were we heard about the positives within the travel party. That caused, obviously, with the contact tracing and everything, the first pause. Were there more behind that that caused some other issues, or was this the spark that kind of set the fire?
There was an additional one, yes.
Okay.
The school's been real quiet about it, but some of the families have put some information out about it. And so, yeah, there was a player that tested positive as well. So, and there's been some social media posts by Jade Williams, who is one of the senior players for Duke's team, that kind of said, hey, we're still together as a team. We made this decision together. We're not quitting. We made this decision for our health and safety. And if the testing was done every day, like we do, we feel comfortable playing these teams. But that's not, even within the conference, everybody does different things. So, and if you think about it, it kind of goes back to what Coach K was saying on the comments that he made after the Illinois game about we need to take a look at this whole thing, which is why Duke's men decided one of the reasons not to play non-conference teams is because they don't have the same testing standards that ACC teams would or Duke would. So they said, we're not going to put ourselves in that situation. So and the next day is when the Louisville game was played with the women. And Kara Lawson, after that game, said, I don't think we should be playing. So it all kind of, melds together there.
See, what do you think the trickle-down effect is for the women's side in the league moving forward?
I mean, I think you could see other teams take a look at the situation and go, maybe Duke's right. Maybe we shouldn't put ourselves in this situation. As we've had, multiple teams within the league already on pause, in addition to Duke and Louisville. And I think it's safe to assume that more are going to come here. That's just the way this virus seems to be working. We saw it in football. We see it all over the country in other sports. And it's another example of the players taking control of the situation and expressing their power, and which has been kind of a theme for this year in the COVID era, is that, it used to be players were kind of – they were told what to do and they did it, and – now they have some power. They can exercise that power. And I think it could happen again.
Steve, one of the things that came to mind when I saw this on Friday, and the leadership at Duke is so strong. Dr. Vince Price, the president, has been, as you know, better than anybody else, one of the guys at the front of this from a caution and protection standpoint. There's no doubt that he is going to support the student body. Duke is an institution. I mean, we had Bob Weissman on here to talk about the facilities back prior to football. They're not going to have anybody at Cameron in the foreseeable future that we know of at this point as they return to the floor tomorrow night to play Pittsburgh. How thin a line do you think Duke is from maybe extending this beyond the women's program? I mean, it seems to be a very – I don't want to say cautious, but that's the best word I've got right now for maybe the approach and philosophy there.
Yeah, I mean, it's always right there because Vince Price's background is in the Ivy League. And we know what the Ivy League's done, right? They don't play at all. Mm-hmm. And so they were the first ones to cancel their tournament back in March before everybody else did. And they're not playing basketball this winter. So that's where his base comes from. And then it kind of builds from there. I mean, there are obviously, you know, important things about, you know, TV revenue and things like that and all. And that does factor in there. There's no question about it. I think that, one outbreak away is kind of where everybody is. And I think Duke's in that too. And they'll take it seriously for sure.
Well, we saw what happened in March at the ACC tournament. As far as Duke was concerned, they were like, hey, we'll catch you guys later. And then, of course, the tournament shut down. All of college sports shut down. You know, when you read this story the first time, at least I did, the first thing I thought of was, okay, if the ladies aren't comfortable playing, how about the men? Right? I mean, I think it's the first thing that goes through everybody's head. So with that said, you know, again, you mentioned what Coach K did as far as the non-conference schedule and said, hey, our kids need a break. I mean, Steve, seriously, I mean, we're sitting here on the cusp of getting into January and what has already been a strange ACC men's basketball season with no top 10s, that streak gets snapped, no top 15, that streak gets snapped. And there's no real alpha dog, as we've been talking about. So really right. Big picture when it comes to Coach K and his guys, I mean, really, where are we here at the end of December?
Yeah, I mean, they're back and, you know, on campus, they after the Notre Dame game on the 16th, they turned the kids loose for the first time since August, since they got to campus, and they got to see their families if they wanted to, all those things. So they got back on Christmas Eve, and they went through the protocols of testing. As soon as they got in testing, quarantine until you're negative, and then you can, you know, start getting back out again. So they're going through that process, but they're getting ready to play tomorrow night and against Pittsburgh. And, of course, Jeff Capel tested positive last week, right? So now we're wondering – what his status is going to be, if he's going to travel today, and that could be he's not going to be here. So, again, it's a weird season. But the men, obviously, like you, the first question I had was, you know, after we get through the part about the women, is what's happening with the men's basketball program and the other sports at Duke? And they made it clear from the jump there that the men were fine, other programs were fine for now. It depends upon what happens. And so now I'm monitoring. I'm wondering if the men's players will see what the women did and say, you know what, this isn't worth it for us either. I mean, they could do that. And given the way, you know, Vince Price and Duke's administration's handled things, as you mentioned earlier, I'm sure they would support them if they had that decision. But as of right now, they haven't made that call.
Steve, it's also, I guess, you know, Kevin White's the athletic director there. His son is the head basketball coach at Florida, Mike White, who obviously had the just unbelievable experience now with Keontae Johnson, the SEC's player of the year. And there are all sorts of reports. None have been confirmed that I know. I know his parents have talked about acute myocarditis. How much of that kind of rolls around in the shadows of this in your mind?
Oh, I think it's a big factor. I think that, I mean, this, you know, has affected Kevin White's family personally. And, you know, I know how close, obviously, Kevin is to his son, and it's something that's been discussed. And so it has to play a factor. It has to, you know, the overall caution that we have. I mean, there's the worst scenario right there is you have a healthy player who's on the court and just collapses. And, you know, Wes, I know you were in the arena, you know, at NC State a couple of years ago, right, when the South Carolina State player, you know, it still sticks with me what I saw that day. I'm sure it does to you. That was a scary thing. And so now this could happen to lots of players because of this cardiac issue with COVID. So, yeah, it's something that's on everybody's mind.
Well, listen, we appreciate you getting up. Again, it's been one of those years, right? You just every time you think maybe we reach a calm, here comes a crazy story. And, you know, props to the Duke women who just said, hey, listen, if we're not comfortable in playing – hey, the student athletes are the stars of the show here. So you do what you have to do, whether it's playing a basketball game or North Carolina players in football opting out and saying, hey, listen, we're going to go take care of me first. We are living in interesting times, aren't we, Steve? I mean, it's amazing what 2020 has delivered to us.
It has, and that's one thing I'll mention real quick. You know, my colleague and your friend Luke DeCock wrote a column over the weekend about, you know, we name our top most powerful person in the triangle in sports for the year every year. And he named the college athlete. this is another example of it right now. They are taking the power that they have and they're exercising it.
Yep, no question. Yeah. Happy holidays, man. Appreciate your time as always.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks for having me on.
You bet. Steve Weissman covers Duke athletics for the News and Observer. In Raleigh, we've got women's basketball coming up for you. New Year's Eve, a matinee right here on Thursday. Notre Dame and Miami, 1 o'clock Eastern. Neil Ivey and Katie Meyer matching wits right here on the ACC Network and streaming live on the ESPN app. We'll turn our attention back to men's hoops in just a moment. When we come back, Pac's already asked the question, who is the alpha dog? Not sure yet. Let's speculate. What do you say on a Monday? Back after this on ACC Network.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Monday. Happy holidays to everyone. 844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the program. All right, so we've been kicking around this idea over the weekend. We went from last year with the glob, right? The middle tier of the ACC, literally in men's basketball, changed on a daily basis. It was crazy. This year, however, it's now morphed into the top. Who is the ACC men's basketball alpha? Who is it? I mean, you thought it was Virginia. They were down 33 this weekend. Hey, man, I think like Louisville. They were down 37 to Wisconsin last week. I think like Carolina. They're always down double digits in the first half. Is it Duke? I don't know. Got beat at home to Sparty in Illinois. What is it, Wes? Who is the ACC alpha dog in men's basketball?
We're gonna answer this today. I'm still gonna say Florida State. Okay,
by default.
Yeah, only because the loss to UCF. I guess. I mean. That's the problem. We could have a little more clarity, excuse me, if the Noles had been undefeated, right? I mean, they haven't lost a game. They're really good,
right?
But when they lose by nearly double digits to UCF, and you're thinking, well, wait a second. Yeah, at home especially. You know, where's your doubt, right? So I don't know that I've got a great answer for you, Mark. And the concerning part is I don't know when I'll have a good answer.
That's
the part. Looking over some of these notes, that's the concerning issue here. We were talking about how it relates to the bigger game in the NCAA tournament, whatever that looks like. But the reality of it is the ACC season is going to be pretty interesting. Do you know, though, the other night when we had the NC State-Carolina game, that was the first game of the year that we've had that was five or less. Well, actually, the second. We had Clemson and Virginia Tech. That might have been a six-point game. But that State-Carolina game the other night was the first five or less game we'd had in the ACC. Well, and the reason I bring that up is because last year, you know, we had almost 35% of the games were five or less, and we set a record for overtime games last year in conference play.
Well, there's so many ifs, right? I keep giving you this line all the time, but it's so true. If is the biggest word in sports. There are so many ifs with the men's side. You know, if Louisville can get healthy, do they become the team? I mean, Carlique Jones has been really, really good. You also have teams like NC State, who you did that, you know, the game the other night. I think Virginia Tech, Syracuse, Clemson are teams. I think that you would now throw them that we didn't think before the season. Well, they'll be okay. They'll kind of be the glob this year. Now you're sensing that collection of teams could very well move right into the upper tier and be completely comfortable while Duke tries to figure out their chemistry. And North Carolina, like I said, always behind by double digits in the first half. And, you know, Virginia's got a ton of work to do. So I have no worth. I think you're probably right. Florida State, by default, right now would be your one. But the UCF loss was one of those you kind of scratched your heads and went, whoa. That shouldn't be happening. So I don't know what the answer is. And you're right, Wes. When you take a crystal ball look and say, hey, at what point in time do you think you're going to figure this out? I don't know. I think it's going to be this way all year long, given the starts and the stops of what this season already looks like.
I think you're exactly – I mean, that's the part that when I was looking at numbers this weekend and watching those two ball games on Saturday, I kept thinking, you know what? I think we might be headed down this path for the longer road in terms of trying to find this clarity. And You know, I feel like the late Tim Russert. Remember before we ever got to touch screens in the political world during election night, he used to have that little whiteboard. Remember that? Where he'd have the dry erase marker. Maybe we need to get one of those for you and me on a weekly basis or a daily basis come basketball season. And maybe we start putting some teams in order on a little dry erase board. There'd be no point investing, you know, the manpower to build graphics and fancy things like that on this show because it's going to change too much. I mean, NC State, Carolina the other night, Clemson, Virginia Tech on the road, Mark, those could be indicative of what we get a lot of this year. It's going to be a scrap every night in this league. Number one, you don't know when you're going to play. You have a schedule, but you don't know for sure that's when you're going to play. Number two, you don't know how the impact of health and things like that are going to come out. Three, there's so many variables that get cured in non-conference play. You know, we all talk about basketball starting early, and I'm as guilty as anybody on that, right? We talk about how early basketball starts, but think about how many games they play that you don't pay attention to between the start in November and when league play really begins in late December, right? Some of those games are like a Tuesday night against a directional or whatever the case may be. Well, coaches in those games are starting to kind of fortify a little bit of what their team's going to be. We don't have any of that this year. The fortification of your particular team is occurring on the floor more often than not on television in a game that is probably going to be pretty intense because you know you might not have as many this year as you've had in previous years. I think that's where a lot of this is coming from too. And oh, by the way, it's a pretty good league and everybody's good to start and the margin of error is very, very thin.
And the stat we already gave you about the league being 1-10 versus the latest AP top 25 non-conference games, that doesn't help anybody's resume. So that makes a game right. Like tomorrow night, Florida State Clemson, a monster game. I mean, they're all. It is yep. Going to be an ebb and flow, and that's why we were kidding around over the weekend about, hey, you want to do accounting on Monday for men's basketball? We were like, man,
I said no.
I said yes because it would be such a disaster because you can't even. You know, normally, like in football, hey, we get the first five or six, you kind of figure it out. Then it gets interesting. It really starts at number one this year, right now in men's yeah. basketball, and go. Hey, who knows? 15 could beat 1 tomorrow, right, at this stage.
Yeah.
Who knows how this thing's going to play out? But it is going to be fascinating to watch. That is for sure.
All right. I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. Top of the hour. Hour one in the books on a Monday between Christmas and New Year's. So, you know, it's that holiday flow week, if you will. And when we come back, we're going to ask basketball analyst Luke Hancock, who's number one and why in the ACC – as we get ready for another set of conference games. And oh, by the way, the Cards beat the Cats. All that and more coming up with Luke Hancock next on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham.